We have about a minute before we start, but as people are getting their seats and as we're starting to collect ourselves, be thinking about this. This is kind of a thought question to get us started this morning. Is there a couple in the Bible, a married couple, that we have more information about than Abraham and Sarah as far as their married interactions? Just be thinking about that as everyone starts getting their seats. So it's time to start. So we're going to continue our class on the influence of a woman that we started last Sunday. The lesson sheets for tonight's lesson on prayer that Eric Phelps is presenting, those lesson sheets on the back table. So you might want to go ahead and collect one of those before this evening so you'll have that information ahead of time. So, we talked about the general idea of women in the Bible and their influence and why that's important last week. We looked quickly at Eve and then Job's wife, as an example of women and their influence and how it was used. I'll try to better manage the comments today than I did last Sunday. I got a lot of comments afterwards that I wasn't doing a good job of getting comments. And I was trying to quickly go through the material, so I'll do better today. We won't be as rushed. So this morning, we're going to talk about Sarah. Hopefully you picked up a lesson sheet. But if not, the schedule that we put in the back shows every week what the topic and what the readings are. So even if you don't have a lesson sheet, if you have a schedule, you'll know what material we're going to be talking about. So that first question I ask, is there a couple in the Bible that we have more information about as it relates to husband and wife and their interactions? Is there a couple more recorded than Abraham and Sarah? Isaac, okay. And I would think that maybe between Jacob and Leah and Rachel, there's a lot. But I think perhaps this is Abraham and Sarah, maybe the most. If you look back in Genesis and all the different events that's recorded about these two, there's a lot there. So if it's the most, I don't know, but it's certainly a lot of information about Abraham and Sarah. So looking back, Nikki? Yeah, there's quite a bit about Jezebel and Ahab, that's true. And we'll look at them later in the quarter, specifically. So looking back at the life of Sarah, how would you summarize her life if you just summarized it in a word or two? Broad view of her life. Respected her husband, says Ricardo. Okay. Other words we might use to describe Sarah's life in its totality? She's jealous. But would we characterize her whole life as jealous? Faithful? Yeah. I think generally we look at Sarah and we have her very highly rated as far as Old Testament characters go. And part of that's because in the New Testament we see references to Sarah that present her that way. In Hebrews, right, they talk about her faith. She's kind of in 1 Peter, she's recorded as being submissive to her husband and being a role model for women. So I think we look at Sarah very favorably. A self-thinker? Okay, good. Okay, same thing for Abraham. Looking at Abraham's life, just in a broad view, how would we describe Abraham? Faithful as well? Okay, that comes up, sure. So, in general terms, if both Abraham and Sarah were faithful and obedient to God, would you expect that their married interactions would be very harmonious? We would expect that, right? I mean, they had the same objectives, the same values, and they worked together. We expect the two faithful people that are both serving God would have a marriage that reflects that. And yet, while that's true, there are instances recorded for us where there's disharmony among the husband and wife, which is, I think, very interesting. And that, again, one of the things we want to do as we look at these Bible accounts is notice that these are real people with complicated lives and struggles, and that's what makes these stories relatable, is that they're not perfect people. They struggle, just like we struggle today. So the first lesson sheet we have for this morning, the text given is Genesis chapter 16, verses 1 through 6. So in all the recorded events in the life of Abraham and Sarah, we're going to focus right now on these few verses. The background that gets us here, though, is obviously that God had promised Abraham. We talk about three things, three promises that God made to Abraham. Two of those three promises required a son. So having a son was critical for God to accomplish what he's promised to Abraham. When he is 86 years old, he is still without a son. So, I think age 75 is when those promises are first made to Abraham. So it's been a while since the promises were made, and still no son. In verses 1 and 2 of chapter 16, "Now Sarai, Abram's wife, had borne him no children, and she had an Egyptian maid whose name was Hagar. So Sarai said to Abram, 'Now behold, the Lord has prevented me from bearing children. Please go in to my maid, because I shall obtain children. Perhaps I shall obtain children through her.' And Abraham listened to the voice of Sarai." For us, this sounds very strange, that this would be Sarah's request of her husband. But this is what she asked him to do. And it says here that Abram listened to Sarai. And so this is the decision that's been made in this family. This is how they're going to proceed. Is it unusual in this culture to handle a situation like this? Does anyone have any information that would give us a little bit of insight as to what's going on here with this use of the handmaid? A surrogate mother? Okay, that's true. That's what's happening here. Do we see that anywhere else in the Old Testament? Jacob, yeah. And that's the one that sticks in my mind. We had Leah, Jacob's first wife, by trickery, essentially, bearing him sons. And Rachel was not able to have children. And so her solution was take her handmaiden and offer her up to Jacob. And then those children were counted for Rachel. That was how they accounted. That's who the mother was, even though that's not the biological mother. And so in the case of Jacob, this little game starts to take place when it's kind of an arms race. You know, who can have the most sons for Jacob and all the problems that resulted there. So is that the same situation that's happening here? Okay. They could. If this happens, then yes. Then the status changes to a concubine. Hagar belonged to Sarah as a personal servant to this point. At this time, Sarah is altering the relationships here by giving her over to Abraham. She becomes a concubine. it's a cultural thing that happened back then. It's hard for us to really relate to how this worked. There's some complications, obviously, when this happened in the marriage relationship. I don't want to get ahead of myself. We're going to go through some of these boxes in a minute and answer some of these questions. But technically, Sarah did this, and any child born to Hagar would have been counted towards Sarah's, children. She gets credit for it, essentially. The problem is that, before I get into that, back then, the status of a wife was closely tied to their ability to have children, right? And so we saw that in the story of Jacob. So Sarah not having children here, no one knows when a couple is not having children if it's a problem with the husband or the wife. But once another woman is brought in and the surrogate is able to have children, then it becomes obvious that the problem was on Sarah's side and not Abraham's side. And perhaps that's what led Hagar to start to have a different attitude towards Sarah. We're not told exactly what is going on here, that there is a change between Sarah and Hagar. And it could be that she's now looking down upon Sarah as, well, Abraham was fine all these years, it was Sarah's fault. Or it could be this relationship changed, and now perhaps she seeks the affection of Abraham, which she didn't before, or maybe that's perceived with Sarah. We don't know precisely. But certainly there's a change here, because it says in verse 5, well, let's go back to verse 4. And he went in to Hagar, and she conceived, and when she saw that she had conceived, her mistress was despised in her sight. And Sarai said to Abram, "May the wrong done me be upon you. I gave my maid into your arms, but when she saw that she had conceived, I was despised in her sight. May the Lord judge between you and me." What's happening here? What's boiled down? What's Sarah saying? She is. I think Sarah is blaming Abraham for what's occurred here. So if it's her fault, how could she blame Abraham? Hold on, Julie. Okay. If she's changed. Okay. Hagar is the one with the problem. Okay. Other comments about what we're seeing play out right here? To me, it's a very interesting conversation, because it looks like to me that this was Sarah's idea. Abraham listened to Sarah, and now she comes back and she's mad at him because of how this has played out, which to me, I mean, it's very real. It's the kind of thing that happens in our lives. And I don't know if Abraham could have done anything differently or not, but here he's in the doghouse. And so... Okay. She had a role. Okay. Okay. Rob? Right. Right, and we see that God is active in this situation with Sarah and her not being able to bear. So if that's true, then it's also he's able to have that same influence with Hagar. And this is playing out. It seems like it's not God's plan that Sarah is doing something kind of, she's gone rogue, we might say, and then now there's all these consequences that have to be dealt with. It's unclear as to why it played out this way. But I think Sarah was trying to help and didn't like how it played out. Someone else had a comment?
Mm-hmm.
Or at least that's what's attributed. I mean, we don't really always know in these Bible stories. Okay. A lot of times, and that's true, a lot of times the Bible said that God opened her womb or closed. And so, okay, so in verse 5, Sarah's got a complaint. She's got a problem with Abraham. One more comment, Laverne? That's true, and yet sometimes we see that people pray to God and then they don't take any action where they had action they could take. So that's true here, and it's sometimes hard for us to know. You know, we pray, we put it in God's hand, but a lot of times we still have actions we have to take to make that come about. So there's a lot of speculating we can do here. We don't have all the answers, but it's a difficult situation that now suddenly Abraham, Sarah, and Hagar are in. So what does Abraham suggest in verse 6 to handle the situation? Okay, so is he changing Hagar's relationship again by telling Sarah, she's your maidservant, do as you wish? It seems like that, to me, that's what's happening perhaps. She went from a house slave for Sarah in Sarah's control to a concubine for Abraham, and now it seems like that he's saying, okay, now she's back under your control, do as you please. And how does Sarah please? Harsh. She's very harsh with Hagar, to the extent it's so harsh that Hagar just runs away. So we don't have any details here also about what exactly the treatment was, but it was enough to drive her to run away. Okay. All right, let's go through the boxes for the table that I provided, and perhaps it'll help us to organize our thoughts on this. The first box is always, what's the relationship with the influenced and the influenced individual? Spouse. Okay, this one's a little bit tricky. Spouse is correct, wife is correct, but what else? Yeah, they're half-sister, half-brother relationship. Pardon me, and that's important because it plays out strangely in some of their interactions we see in previous and further chapters. The next box, was the relationship between the two long-term or short-term? How long? Yeah, real long. Yeah, we're talking about 75 years of marriage at least. So this is a long-term relationship. Overall result of this situation, was the influence positive or negative? A lot of us would say negative. It created a lot of problems. It's a little bit complicated, but generally I would say this is a negative result from this influence. What was the method of influence that Sarah used here? The wrong reasoning? Okay. But how did she convince him? She may have had reasoning that was maybe flawed, but how did she convince Abraham? Yes? So she reasoned to him, this is how we're going to accomplish what God has promised. Okay. So she didn't, it's not really a demand here, it's more of a suggestion. Okay. I put down my answer as a direct request. Very specific. She had something specific in mind she wanted. So what was the impact of the influence? Okay, yeah, that's the immediate, the strife between Hagar and Sarah. That's the impact. Okay, strife between Abraham and Sarah. What about long term? Yeah, this is going to be one of those things where it seemed like perhaps a small decision, but it turned into a whole nation of people arising that would oppose the Jews. Ishmael's descendants were going to be at conflict with Isaac's descendants forever to this day. It was a huge impact worldwide, and one of those things that we see about decisions we make. Sometimes we think we're just making a decision for us, and it affects a lot of other people. And so surely they didn't realize this was going to lead to so much more. Was the influence a result of a conscious effort? Yes, this case it was. Was the instance part of a larger pattern of influence? In other words, do we see Sarah exerting herself in this way often? Nikki says no. Prior to this, yeah, we haven't seen a pattern yet. In fact, what we have seen is her submitting to Abraham to the extent where he tells her, pretend you're my sister. Tell people you're my sister. And that's what they do. When Abraham leaves his home, Ur of the Chaldees, where they're rich, Sarah comes along. It's submissive that we can see to this point, and suddenly she starts to exert herself a little bit. So I don't think this is part of a pattern of this type of thing, but it is interesting that even when a spouse can be submissive, can be essentially a team player, yet she's still going to exert herself when she feels it's necessary. Was Abraham aware of the effort to influence? Yeah, it wasn't anything behind his back. It was a request made directly to him. Would Abraham have been better off without the influence? I hear a yes. Better off? I mean, it seems like he would have been better off. We can speculate that he would have been better off. He would have saved himself all this family strife. He has some difficult decisions to make coming up, we're going to see in a minute, relative to Ishmael. God's will would have been accomplished through Sarah, turns out. And yet God used this opportunity to direct Abraham further. So it's tough to say, but I think just superficially, yeah, he would have been better off if he had somehow convinced Sarah that they're going to wait for God to handle this through Sarah. Now, at this point, Sarah has not been promised that the child will be through her. So she's not disobeying God. Abraham's been given promises. We find out in the next few chapters, it's going to be revealed that the child will be through Sarah. But at this point, she didn't have that information. So some more speculation here in the next box. What would have been the result of the situation without the influence? We've kind of been talking about this a little bit already. Yeah, no Ishmael. So yeah, it's hard to say, but certainly it wouldn't have been an Ishmael. Other more immediate for Abraham and Sarah. Does God condemn Sarah or punish her based on this instance? No, he doesn't. Right. It's hard to say. Like I said, she didn't have any direction from God the way Abraham had at this point. So That's what you would have expected. Abraham would have taken this to God, right? He did have access through prayer as a minimum, and then God spoke to him at other times. But in this case, Abraham got advice from Sarah, and he acted. Adoption. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's all true. So, okay, and so that leads us to the first discussion question, I think. What was Sarah's motivation here? Well, was it about her, do we think? About her having status as a mom through somebody else? Was she just trying to correct that? Or, yeah, it seems to me she was trying to be unselfish, I think, because what she proposed was not the kind of thing a spouse would want in their relationship. So it seems to me, speculating here, that this suggestion was an unselfish thing to bring about the promises that God had promised to her husband. Again, I know we're speculating, but that's where I go with this. Julie? Right. Right. Okay. Good. Yes. Well, and when she comes to Abraham, she says, "God has prevented me from having kids." So she's taken credit for the problem, even though I don't know how she knew that, or she was just saying that. But okay. So last thought question before we move on to the next one, because the next one's important too. If Sarah showed lack of faith by offering Hagar to Abraham, did Abraham show a lack of faith by agreeing to the arrangement? Is it what? Yes. Okay. Right. Okay. So if she displayed lack of faith, then Abraham's as guilty as Sarah. If we're going to attribute that to lack of faith, which I don't know that we can, but that's what a lot of people normally would jump to in this situation. Okay. Raul? Yes, that's true. And so, and that idea about the culture back then and trying to read it today, that's something we always had to try to put ourselves in that time and understand the culture they were in. So let's skip ahead now. Let's go to chapter 21 and see the rest of the story, because there's another request that Sarah makes here in chapter 21. If Sarah is credited in the custom as being the mother of Ishmael, does she ever bond with Ishmael as a mother and a son? There's no evidence that they ever bonded. And that's not surprising based on Hagar's relationship with Sarah, which should have been, in a custom, a close relationship was not there, it seems. Ricardo? The mother, that would be Sarah in this case. It very much Hagar is Ishmael's mom in all senses here. And Sarah is, you know, detached. In chapter 21, what we see in verse 1, then the Lord took note of Sarah as he had said, and the Lord did for Sarah as he had promised. Because at previous chapter, we find out that Sarah is going to be the one to have this promised child for Abraham. So Sarah conceived and bore a son to Abraham in his old age. Skip down to verse 8. And the child grew and was weaned, and Abraham made a great feast on the day that Isaac was weaned. Looking at some of the commentaries, there's not agreement on what age this was, but generally I think around 3 years old. This would have been based on this time and this culture when this feast would have happened. So that would make Ishmael 17 at this time, if Isaac is 3. Verse 9, now Sarah saw the son of Hagar, the Egyptian, not her son, but it says here, she saw the son of Hagar, the Egyptian, whom she had borne to Abraham, mocking. What does that mean, mocking? Does anyone have something different or explanation to share? Nikki says, making fun of, laughing at who? Who's the butt of the joke? Well, Ishmael's the one doing it. I think we think Isaac is the one that's being made fun of, but a lot of different commentaries don't agree with that. Some say that Sarah is still the one being ridiculed here because of her age, perhaps. But it's, a lot of us would tend to think that Isaac, since he's a little brother, is being picked on here. Not a lot of information on this word mocking, other than some suggest it's some of the same language we see for persecute. Would it have had to have been anything severe to get Sarah's attention, do you think? Why is that? You think Sarah was hypersensitive? Yeah, and that wouldn't be surprising based on the relationship with Hagar. And now Sarah's finally got her precious little boy, and to have this teenager who's mocking is going to be quickly picked up on. And how does Sarah react to this? She wants the slave woman and the child gone. Is that legal in this situation for the husband to send away the firstborn? You think it's, what would have to happen, based on what we do know from passages in the Bible, when the firstborn son is? I'll just answer my own question. He had an inheritance. Ishmael did. He was a firstborn. You can't just send him away. You have to provide for him, at least up to half of the possessions of the father as the firstborn. You can't just send them off. So what she's asking for here is quite extraordinary. Not only does she want him physically gone, but she wants him to be essentially disowned. He doesn't get any inheritance, is what she specifies here. So how does Abraham respond initially to Sarah's request? Did he say, okay, it's done, and sends him on his way? Distressed. So why would he be distressed? Yeah, so just because Sarah didn't have a relationship with Ishmael, it seems to me here at least that there is a love, an affection. There is a relationship between Abraham and Ishmael. And we see when when Abraham dies, Ishmael comes back to bury Abraham. There's a relationship here. So how easy is it for a father to say, oh, Sarah, you're unhappy, you're very emotional, yeah, I'm gonna go ahead and grant your request? Is that an easy thing to do? So what has to happen for Abraham to go along with this? God has to intervene here. And what does God say to Abraham? Listen to Sarah. Well, he's listened to Sarah before, and it's gotten him into trouble. In this case, God intervenes and says, yeah, Sarah is right in this instance. You need to send him away. And don't worry, I'm going to take care of him, relieving Abraham of I guess, the guilt of sending him away. So that's a huge thing for a wife to ask her husband to do. As influential as Sarah has been, this causes Abraham to pause. He is not able to do it on his own. It takes God coming in. But yet, when God tells Abraham to listen to Sarah, I think we count this as another example of Abraham's great faith. He does it. He sends Hagar and Ishmael away. Okay. So let's answer these questions. We have about maybe 5-7 minutes left. So this is based on the verses in Genesis 21, 1 through 21. What's the relationship between the influenced individual? We already said wife and half-sister. What is the relationship between the two, long-term, short-term? Long-term. Overall result in this instance. In the instance where Sarah is influencing Abraham here, is this positive or negative? Positive, you say? Positive, Nikki? Okay, positive based on verse 10. Okay, and verse 10 is where, because of the reference to Isaac here as being the heir. Is that an important distinction between Ishmael and Isaac? Yeah, we know from Galatians, this is really an important point to be made here, that the heir was to be Isaac, not Ishmael. And there's a lot of implications for this when it comes to covenants that we'll find out in Galatians. But here, it was important for it to be very clear that Isaac, if Ishmael had stayed, would it have been as clear who the heir was? By getting rid of Ishmael, it becomes obvious that Isaac is going to be the heir. That's right. The promises are going to be fulfilled through Isaac. And so now we have this odd situation where there's actually an older son that has to be removed for that to all be evident. What's the method of influence here? Command, is that what you said? Would y'all classify it as that strong? Did Sarah command Abraham to do this? Demand? Yeah, I use the word demand here. Yeah, I think demand is what command, demand, something like that. Sarah is very strong here. What was the impact of the influence? What happens as a result of this request? Isaac becomes the heir. That's important, right? Abraham's distress. It's going to get worse because he's going to be distanced from his first son, and so that would, I mean, he's losing contact. That's a big result of this. What about Isaac? What happens to Isaac as a result, just in the short term? He's an only child now. Yeah, there's no big brother to bully him, pick on him. He's raised as an only child, and that's how he grows and is treated as an only child. Was the influence a result of a conscious effort? Obviously, it was. It was. She seems to be very passive. Oftentimes, Sarah does, and all these stories we do have. And yet here she comes across with a very strong demand, request. Is that the pattern, the next box? Is that the pattern for her? Mm-hmm. So it's hard to say, perhaps, if this is a pattern or not. We've seen it. She's been a little assertive previously with the request for Hagar. So I don't know if you want to put there that this is part of a pattern or not. In any of these stories we're going to look at, we're not going to have a lot of backstory with these women and the men they're influencing, or sometimes the women are influencing. Sometimes we're going to be able to say definitely there's a pattern here, and this one perhaps is not quite so clear. Was Abraham aware of the effort to influence? Yes, he was. Would Abraham have been better off or worse off without the influence? You think God, let's ask for maybe some more speculation. You think God would have intervened if Sarah had not? Okay. Gail says she's not so sure that's not what happened. This is just how God handled it. And that's certainly how this plays out. So you could certainly say that, right? Because God, as soon as Abraham is considering the prospect, God intervenes and says, yeah, Sarah's doing what needs to be done. So here's an obvious speculation question. What would have been the results without the influence? What if assuming God didn't intervene, assuming the situation stayed as it was with Ishmael and Isaac together? Animosity? Between who? Yeah. It's a mess. Can you imagine a family situation any more difficult than this one if things had just continued as they were? Someone else had a comment? Julie? Ishmael would have been the obvious heir, and it would have been confusing if Abraham didn't act that way. Okay? And I put down unhappy wife, unhappy life. So takeaway for this one. What kind of takeaways do we get from this instance? Right. Okay, she was under subjection, and yet she still exerted herself in these instances. So, and you touched on one I wanted to mention, and see what y'all think about this. In this instance with Ishmael teasing Isaac, Sarah comes to Abraham. She comes across as very emotional with this request, and I want him gone. I want him gone now. He's not going to be an heir. Get rid of them. And I get the sense that this was an emotional request. Because she was emotional, was this the wrong thing to do? I mean, sometimes we associate an emotional reaction in, well, this is obviously not the right solution. They're emotional. In this case, she was emotional, and it was still the right thing. So, husbands and wife, as we interact together, there's a lot of emotion that comes up. Just because one of us is emotional doesn't mean it's the wrong perspective. And sometimes we tend to, well, he's just emotional or she's just emotional, so clearly this is not the right path. We have to consider, even in an emotional situation, they may have the right answer in their emotions. Rob, you? 14, when Isaac was born, right? He's weaned. Yeah. Yeah, and so when we read this account of Hagar going off into the wilderness, and this is a little bit beyond the scope, we have a minute though, and it sounds like he's a child that she's carrying through the desert, and she stashes him under a bush, and he's helpless. And she goes away, and he's crying, and she's out of water, and she's out of hope, and she just prays to God, don't let me watch him die. He's really 17, probably, or at least in that age range. Not changing the fact that Ishmael, at this point, has Moses didn't, and Moses, Abraham didn't send him out to die. He sent them away with provisions in the morning to get to the next town, to the next well, to the next watering hole. If you read the verses, she gets lost and she's wandering around and she runs out of water. And so she is depressed, sad, but that was not Abram's intention to send them away to die. And so God comes to her and comforts her and then says, by the way, the water well is just right over there. It's just right here. You've missed it. So she goes, gets water, and things progress. But it's interesting because when you read this, a lot of times we think of Ishmael being an infant, perhaps the way it's described here, but that's not what's happening here. He's a old teenager. All right, we're out of time. A couple thought questions. Consider, what was Sarah's motivation this time around? Previously we said perhaps it was unselfishness. Now what's her motivation? And do you think Sarah forgot that it was her role that caused Ishmael to be there to tease Isaac in the first place? Would it have mattered in her response? In other words, she's upset now, again, at this teasing going on. Did she forget that she was involved in this whole thing? I don't think she forgot for a moment that she's got a role to play. But did it matter at this time? It didn't matter at all. It doesn't matter how we got here. She wants the situation corrected, which is, I think, is also interesting. Okay. Perhaps. Wasn't welcoming of... No, not yet. Yeah. Okay. Next week, the sheets are back there for the discussion about Rachel. Okay. Thank you all.